Appendix B. Chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear. Seaburn operations are the employment of tactical capabilities that counter the entire range of seaburn threats and hazards. These are done through seaburn proliferation prevention, seaburn counterforce, seaburn defense, and seaburn consequence management activities in support of operational and strategic objectives to combat seaburn and operate safely in seaburn environments. Many state and non-state actors, including terrorists and criminals, possess or have the capability to possess, develop, or proliferate seaburn weapons. U.S. policy prohibits the use of chemical or biological weapons under any circumstances, but it reserves the right to employ nuclear weapons. Many potential enemies are under no such constraint. Refer to FM 3-11/MCWP 3-37.1/NWP 3-11/AFTTP 3-2.42 for more information. Section 1. Mission-Oriented Protective Posture Analysis. Protecting service members from the harmful hazards associated with seaburn attacks in an AO is essential to preserving combat power. When the probability of seaburn threats exists, commanders and leaders must conduct a deliberate analysis to posture and equip forces for survival and mission effectiveness. Seaburn and medical personnel consider mission variables and related information to provide recommendations on protection requirements that are reflected in the MOP level. Mission-Oriented Protective Posture Level. Leader involvement is necessary to ensure safe and sustained operations under various climatic conditions. Leaders should develop standard responses and COAs for each projected mission. If the probability of seaburn threats exists, all personnel will carry a protective mask and ensure that individual protective gear is available within 2 hours. Second set available in 6 hours. The standard MOP are MOP 0. Carry a protective mask and ensure that individual protective gear is within arm's reach. MOP 1. Suit worn. Mask, gloves, and boots carried. MOP 2. Suit and boots worn. Gloves and mask carried. MOP 3. Suit, boots, and mask worn. Gloves carried. MOP 4. All protection worn. Determining appropriate MOP level. Leaders determine the appropriate MOP level by assessing mission variables and weighing the impact of increased protection levels. Higher HQ provide MOP level directives to subordinate elements. Refer to ATP 3-11.32/MCWP 10-10ECHO.8/NTTP 3-11.37/AFTTP 3-2.46 for more information. When a seaburn attack is recognized, everyone in the company team must receive the warning and assume the appropriate MOP level. Personnel in immediate danger need warnings they can see or hear. The alarm or signal must be simple and unmistakable if it is to produce a quick and correct reaction. MOP reduction decisions are between the most difficult to make because of the many considerations that affect the final decision. Commanders must evaluate the situation and mission perspectives. Factors include the criticality of the current mission, potential effects of personnel exposure, and the impact on the casualty care system. If a seaburn hazard is located, the contaminated area should be marked. The seaburn warning and reporting system and standardized contamination markers contribute to orderly warning procedures. Warning methods include automatic alarms, vocal alarms. A shout of gas is the most frequently used alarm. Non-vocal alarms, horn blasts or banging of metal-to-metal objects. And visual alarms, most commonly the appropriate hand and arm signals. The M1 series of tanks have a nuclear, biological, chemical system that provides the crew protection when maneuvering or fighting through a chemically or biologically contaminated area. Steps for placing this system into operation is found in the following TMs. M1A1 Abrams tank, TM 9-2350-264-10-2. M1A2 System Enhancement Package Abrams Tank, TM-9-2350-388-10-1. Section 2. Actions during and after an attack. The tank platoon will face a combination of seaburn attacks. If the platoon cannot avoid a seaburn hazard, it must be prepared to protect personnel and equipment from the exposure. The key to effective protection in a seaburn environment is the tank platoon's proficiency in automatically and correctly implementing seaburn defense SOPs. Chemical defense. Give the alarm. Have all unmasked soldiers put on their protective masks and other MOP gear. All personnel should move inside their tanks. In most cases, they should place their hatches in the closed position to protect against gross contamination. Direct the crews of vehicles that are equipped with seaburn over pressurization to turn the system on. Use M256 chemical agent detector kits to determine the type of agent and forward a seaburn 1 chemical report. Continue the mission. Tactical and safety considerations, such as observation of the terrain, enemy disposition, and how much gross contamination that may be spread inside the vehicle, may outweigh the need to keep the tank's hatches closed. Depending on the tactical situation and unit SOP, platoon members may need to keep their hatches in the open or open protected position. Biological defense. After a biological attack, crewmen must assume that all surfaces have been exposed to germs. Do not eat food or drink water that may be contaminated. Eat or drink only food or water that has been stored in sealed containers. Consume it only after washing and cleaning the outside of the container. All water must be boiled for at least 15 minutes. Nuclear defense. This discussion focuses on defensive measures the platoon must be prepared to take to protect tank crewmen, whether they are in their vehicle or have dismounted. Mounted defensive actions. If time permits, the platoon should take the following actions. Position each vehicle behind the best available cover with the front of the vehicle toward the blast. Point the gun away from the blast. Lock the brakes. Secure loose equipment inside the vehicle to prevent injuries and equipment damage. Secure all exterior components that could be damaged by the blast, such as water cans, duffel bags, and antennas, inside the vehicle. Turn off all radios as well as turret and master power. Close and lock all hatches, including ballistic shields. Take actions to protect the head and eyes. As necessary, wear helmets and eye protection whenever possible. Dismounted defensive actions. Immediately drop flat on the ground, face down, or to the bottom of a fighting position, facing away from the fireball. Never run for cover. Cover as much exposed skin as possible. Keep eyes tightly closed. Remain down until the blast wave has passed and debris has stopped falling. Stay calm, check for injury, check weapons and equipment for damage, and prepare to continue the mission. Defense after a nuclear attack. Once the attack has ended, forward a Seaburn 1 nuclear report, organize survivors, secure and organize equipment, repair and reinforce the BP, help casualties, improve protection against possible fallout, and begin continuous monitoring. If the radiation dose rate reaches a hazardous level after fallout has ended, be prepared to move, on order, to a less hazardous area. When operating in or crossing radiologically contaminated areas, vehicles should be closed tightly. Crewmen wear their protective masks to prevent inhalation of radiological particles. Cargo should be covered by tarps or tenting. Mission permitting, vehicles should keep their speed down to prevent dust and should maintain adequate following distance to stay out of the dust raised by preceding vehicles. After the unit exits a contaminated area, personnel, equipment, and cargo should be checked for contamination and decontaminated if necessary. At a minimum, each crew should monitor their total dose accumulated using total dose equipment, such as the UDR-13 or DT-236. Total dose and dose rates should be monitored closely as crews operate and be reported to the company to maintain compliance with operational exposure guidance and provide medical tracking of crew radiation exposure. Marking contaminated areas. Contamination must be marked so unsuspecting personnel will not be exposed to it. When platoon monitoring teams detect or suspect a seaburn hazard, they mark all likely entry points into the area and report the contamination to higher HQ. The only exception to this policy is if marking the area would help the enemy. If this exception is made by the commander, the hazard must still be reported to protect friendly units. Types of markers. U.S. forces use North Atlantic Treaty Organization standard markers to make it easier for allies to recognize the hazards. These markers are in the standard seaburn marking set. The colors and inscriptions on a marker indicate the type of hazard. Additional information is written on the front of the sign. Marking procedures. Markers face away from the contamination. For example, if markers are placed on the edge of a contaminated area to mark a radiological hotspot, they face away from the point of the highest contamination reading. Markers are placed along roads and trails and at other likely points of entry. When time and mission permit, additional markers should be emplaced. The distance between signs varies. In open terrain, they can be placed 25 to 100 meters apart. In hilly or wooded areas, they should be placed more frequently. An observer should be able to stand in front of a marker and see the markers to the left and right of it. Units discovering a marked contaminated area do not have to conduct elaborate, time-consuming surveys. They simply check the extent of contamination and use the information to adjust their plans if necessary. If the size of the hazard has changed, they relocate the signs. If the hazard is gone, they remove the signs. Changes are reported to higher HQ. Section 3. Unmasking procedures. Personnel should unmask as soon as possible, except when a live biological or toxin attack is expected. Use the procedures outlined in the following paragraphs to determine if unmasking is safe. Unmasking with M256/M256-Alpha-1 or Alpha-2 kit. If an M256/M256-Alpha-1 or Alpha-2 detector kit is available, use it to supplement the unmasking procedures. The kit does not detect all agents. Therefore, proper unmasking procedures, which take approximately 15 minutes, must still be used. If all tests with the kit, including a check for liquid contamination using M8 detector paper, have been performed and the results are negative, use the following procedures. The senior person should select a crew member to start the unmasking procedures. If possible, they move to a shady place. Bright, direct sunlight can cause pupils in the eyes to constrict, giving a false symptom. The selected personnel unmask for 5 minutes, then clear and reseal their masks. Observe the personnel for 10 minutes. If no symptoms appear, request permission from higher HQ to signal all clear. Watch all crew members for possible delayed symptoms. Always have first aid treatment immediately available in case it is needed. Note: time to complete the M256/M256-Alpha-1 or Alpha-2 detector kit, including using M8 detector paper for liquid, takes approximately 20 minutes. Two kits completed simultaneously, along with unmasking procedures with the M256/M256-Alpha-1 or Alpha-2 detector kit, will take approximately 35 minutes to complete. Unmasking without M256/M256-Alpha-1 or Alpha-2 kit. If an M256/M256-Alpha-1 or Alpha-2 kit is not available, the unmasking procedures take approximately 35 minutes. When a reasonable amount of time has passed after the attack, find a shady area. Use M8 paper to check the area for possible liquid contamination. Conduct unmasking using these procedures. The senior person selects a crew member. They take a deep breath and break their mask seals, keeping their eyes wide open. After 15 seconds, the personnel clear and reseal their masks. Observe them for 10 minutes. If no symptoms appear, the same personnel break the seals, take 2 or 3 breaths, and clear and reseal their masks. Observe them for 10 minutes. If no symptoms appear, the same personnel unmask for 5 minutes and then redon their masks. If no symptoms appear in 10 minutes, request permission from Higher HQ to signal all clear. Continue to observe all crew members in case delayed symptoms develop. All clear signal. Units pass the all clear signal by word of mouth through their chain of command. Leaders initiate the signal after testing for contamination proves negative. The commander designates the specific all clear signal and includes it in the unit SOP or the op ord. If required, standard sound signals may be used, such as a continuous, sustained blast on a siren, vehicle horn, or similar device. When all clear is announced on the radio, the receiving unit must authenticate the transmission before complying. Section 4. Decontamination. During continuous operations in areas of contamination, decontamination is essential in preventing casualties and severe combat degradation. The tank platoon gains maximum benefit from the available time and decontamination resources by observing these considerations. The platoon should execute decontamination as soon as possible and as far forward as possible. Decontamination should be conducted only to the extent necessary to ensure the platoon's safety and operational readiness. Decontamination priorities with regard to unit safety and mission accomplishment should be strictly observed. These principles are consistent with doctrine that places the burden of decontamination at battalion or company level. For this reason, the tank platoon must develop a thorough SOP covering decontamination methods and priorities, using all available assets to the maximum extent possible. Refer to ATP 3-11.32/MCWP 10-10ECHO.8/NTTP 3-11.37/AFTTP 3-2.46 for a more detailed examination of seaborne decontamination procedures. Immediate decontamination. Immediate decontamination minimizes casualties and limits the spread or transfer of contamination. This action is carried out by the contaminated individual, and the purpose is to save lives and reduce penetration of agent into surfaces. This may include decontamination of personnel, clothing, and equipment. Immediate decontamination should help prevent casualties and permit the use of individual equipment and key systems. Skin decontamination. Skin decontamination is a basic survival skill and should be performed within 1 minute of being contaminated. Decontamination of the eyes by flushing with water as soon as possible following contamination. During skin decontamination and personal wipe down, each service member carries their own skin decontamination kit. The skin decontamination kit should be stored in the individual's mask carrier, or if issued, in the individual equipment carrier bag. Personal wipe down is also done with these kits. Personal wipe down. Personal wipe down decontamination is performed within 15 minutes of contamination to remove contamination from individual equipment. Use detector paper or monitor to locate the agent. Use a radiation detection, indication, and computation set to locate radiological contamination, and then brush, wipe, or shake it off. Individual gear decontamination uses a separate and larger type of decontamination kit. Crews use joint chemical agent detectors to monitor potential contamination, and then use the M100 sorbent decontamination system, NSN 4230-01-466-9095, to provide immediate decontamination to contaminated surfaces of the turret and hull that the crew may touch when exiting the tank. In the event of seaborne contamination of optics, crews conduct tactical decontamination of vision blocks and optics, including main gun optics, CITV, crosswind sensor, and muzzle reference sensor, using the M334 decontamination kit individual equipment, NSN 42-30-01-643-8267. Operator wipe down. Operator wipe down decontamination is done within 15 minutes of contamination to surfaces that operators need to touch or contact to operate the equipment. Radiological contamination in the form of dust particles may be wiped, scraped, or brushed off. During operator wipe down, the unit or activity should use individual equipment decontamination kits. Operational decontamination. Operational decontamination allows a force to continue fighting and sustain momentum after being contaminated and eliminating or reducing the duration that mop equipment should be used. It limits the hazard of transferring contamination by removing most of the gross contamination on equipment and nearly all the contamination on individuals. Operational decontamination is carried out by the contaminated unit, with possible assistance from an organic decontamination organization. Operational decontamination is restricted to the specific parts of contaminated, operationally essential equipment, material, and work areas to minimize contact and transfer hazards and to sustain operations. Contamination will accumulate and be encapsulated in dirt between sprockets, road wheels, and in between tracks. The air induction system from pre-cleaner to plenum may also be contaminated and may require replacement V-packs to prevent restricted or blocked airflow into the turbine. Mop gear exchange. Mop gear exchange should be performed as mission allows, but within 24 hours of being contaminated. A mop gear exchange allows a unit to remove the gross contamination from personnel and equipment and a return to an increased operational readiness in the pursuit of mission accomplishment. Vehicle washdown. Vehicle washdown is conducted as far forward as possible and is performed by the battalion decontamination specialist with assistance from the company or troop decontamination team. It is most effective if started within 1 hour after contamination. There are two steps in vehicle washdown. Step 1. Button up the vehicle and secure equipment. Step 2. Wash down the vehicle and equipment with hot soapy water for 2 to 3 minutes. Because speed is important, do not check vehicles for contamination after the vehicle has been washed down. Remove only gross contamination.